It's time. Time to get inspired and empowered. To realize it's never too late. To create your next amazing story. Get ready to break through, transform, and start living the life of your dreams. So, are you ready? Truly ready to begin your journey to create your next amazing story in life and love? Great. Let's jump in with your host, Life and Love Transformational Coach, Suzanne Oshima.
Welcome, everybody, to the It's Never Too Late show. I'm Suzanne Oshima, and I'm a Life and Love Transformational Coach at Your Next Amazing Story. I'm so excited because today we have a very special guest, Amelia Nagy, and she's a love and confidence coach. And I'm so excited because we're going to talk today about a very important hot topic, and that is it's never too late to heal and start over after a narcissistic relationship. So welcome, Amelia. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thank you, Suzanne. Me too. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So before we jump into, you know, this topic of narcissism, because I feel like it's like the hot topic right now, I would love for you to share with the ladies how you became a love and confidence coach.
Yeah, well, I became a love and confidence coach because I did years of therapy and years of coaching. And when I was in my real estate career, I found myself being very successful, but giving love and relationship advice over real estate contracts. And then I got to a point where it was like, you know, maybe I'm not in the right vehicle, although I loved it and it was great and I was really successful. And then I started in 2015 my narcissistic abuse recovery groups here in San Diego. And I started them because I needed them. And I'm sure you and I'll get more into that. And within a year or two after doing that, I realized how huge the need was. And I started researching therapy, getting my PhD in psychology and all the avenues that I kind of wanted to go to be able to support people with this. And I settled on coaching and I settled on getting certified as a master coach with Alison Armstrong, who is the founder and owner of PAX Programs, and PAX stands for peace. So she really focuses on peace between men and women and partnership between men and women. So I became certified with her. I did her training, her mastery training, and that's how I became a love and confidence coach.
Awesome. And I think everybody in my audience knows who Alison Armstrong is. She's almost like, I feel like she's like the godmother of the whole dating industry, right?
Yeah. Like I say, she's a Tony Robbins of relationships. And I know she doesn't call herself that. And maybe that's okay because like, that's my goal. Like I want to be the Tony Robbins of relationships.
Oh, I love that. Well, so let's jump into this topic of narcissism. And I know you have your own personal story to share with the ladies, but before you do, I think it's important because, you know, there's a lot of different information out there of what a narcissist is. And let's focus on men who are narcissists. It's not to say there aren't women that way, but my audience is all women. So I would love for you to share what is really the quote unquote definition of like a narcissistic man in a relationship.
Yeah, sure. So first, I do want to say that in my experience of leading groups and working with thousands of people at this point, it is pretty much equal. Like there's just as many narcissistic, I call people narcissistically traded. I don't like to call them narcissists because I don't like to dehumanize. So there's just as many narcissistically traded women as men, and both sexes suffer equally in my experience. So just want to put that out there. So I know we'll be focusing on helping women. So we'll be talking about men. So basically, I want to just simplify it, okay? Because people think it just means somebody who's grandiose and selfish. And that's kind of like the surface layer or the presumed meaning. But really what the word refers to is something very different. And at its core, it's somebody who is willing, they're willing to get their needs met at another's expense. So that is the core meaning of what that means. And I'm not going to go into, like, you know, the DSM and narcissistic psychopathy or sociopathy, because those are all, I'm not a therapist, those are all definitions that, according to my research, don't necessarily even come from research anyway, but it's not something that is really well understood. And actually therapists and people studying psychology, like, come to our groups to understand what this is, because, you know, we're doing like the frontline research and contact with people who are going through this phenomenon. So there you have it. It's somebody who's willing to meet their needs at the expense of another.
And when you say needs, that can mean anything as far as needs. It's not just like sex, or it could be anything, right?
It could be anything. It could be emotional needs. It could be financial needs. It could be psychological needs. A lot of times they overlap. And so really, we, you know, the buzzwords nowadays are narcissistic abuse, emotionally unavailable, right? Like, I try not to use those buzzwords because they get so mixed up and they have a million definitions. But, you know, let's go a little bit deeper to define this. So what are they? They're willing to meet their needs at the expense of another, right? Well, so the next step would be that they are somebody who isn't connected with their shame enough to see that they may be causing harm. So now, I know I'm going deep, but we have to think about it this way, because now we have Brené Brown, and she's been teaching us a lot about shame. She's been teaching us a lot about all these things that run in our culture and how they happen. And so when somebody's not in connection with their shame, when they're not in connection with their humanity, they're not able to, I think the word is calibrate their behavior to be in consideration of those around them. And there's a lot of reasons, like, as to how they get there and why they get there. And we can talk about that. Most of it has to do with trauma and unprocessed trauma. But suffice it to say, at the core, pretty much of all abuse, I believe, is narcissism.
Okay, got it. I'm glad you clarified that. That's super helpful, because, like we said, is that there's a lot of different definitions flying around out there, and I think a lot of people don't know which is correct. So I appreciate you clarifying that. So now, I know for you, you have your own personal story of a significant relationship in your past, with the narcissistic man that truly affected your future. Can you share with us what happened in that relationship and how it affected you?
Yes, I'd love to share, because this really was a huge pivot point for me in my life. And this was in my early to mid 20s, and I was seeing a man that I was really in love with. And it was really interesting, because what now I know is love. You know, now I'm married to an amazing man. We've been together almost 10 years. We've got a 5-year-old. Like, that's a healthy partnership. But at that time, I had what I see many women struggling with that I help today, which is I had a blueprint or an idea or a concept of what love was or what in love looked like that was based on my understanding and my interpretation of love from my family of origin. So I had that blueprint. I had that concept, if you will, right? And that's the concept that becomes a foundational layer for our relationships. And if it's good, great. We'll go on. We'll probably have a healthy marriage if we got those tools from our parents. And if it's not good, well, it sucks, because we are not going to get it at school. We're not going to get it from the soap operas and the telenovelas. So how are we going to shift this blueprint if we don't get it right? Right. And so for me, I had this blueprint. I went into the relationship and it felt so familiar and it felt so good. And it felt so like, oh my God, he knows me, like, we're soulmates. But the man was very wounded and had a lot of narcissistic traits. So a lot of points in our relationship, he was willing to put his needs over mine and overlook my needs. And, it, you know, there's many examples, like not taking responsibility for his actions and how they affected me, not being able to apologize for the fact that he may have made a mistake, not being able to own his mistakes. Another term we use nowadays is gaslighting, which is basically like, no, that didn't happen, or no, you shouldn't feel that way because the facts are this, this, and this. Right. And it's a form of invalidation. But when it happens over and over and over and over, you start to lose it. You start to go crazy. And that is a big problem that people suffer with, is this thing we call cognitive dissonance, which is like you go through, if you're in the relationship a long time, things are one way. And you have this worldview of that you are perceived by this person this one way. And usually it's not good. Because what they're doing is they're projecting their shadow and their darkness and their disowned shame, their disowned negative emotions on you. And then they're abusing you. And they think that that gives them the right to abuse you. They don't see it, right? That's the projection mechanism. And then on the other side, we have that world, right? And then on the other side, it's like, our friends or people that are healthy, or if we have healthy relationships, because some of us didn't know how, are telling us, well, this is crazy, what's going on, right? And then there's this huge sort of reality garble. And so that's what was going on for me in this relationship. And there's various examples of, like, you know, asking him not to smoke weed in the house, asking him not to watch porn in the house. I'd come home from work and he'd be smoking weed, watching porn for the 15th time. And so for me, the straw that broke the camel's back, and I'm Bulgarian, so sometimes I mix these things up. The straw that broke the camel's back was I came home one day and I'm like, okay, this is like the 8th time. And I'm fighting about it, right? Like I'm trying to get my needs met. I'm trying to explain to him how this is making me feel. And I realized in that moment, like, this is war. Like, this is war. Like, this is how I grew up, in the same kind of war. Like, people trying to get their needs met and make the other person understand why it's not working for them, or why they're hurt, or why they're crying. Like, that was kind of how I grew up in my family. And I was perpetuating the same cycle with him. And I realized, wow, like, I'm in the middle of a war because I'm trying to make him see something that he's not going to see. And I realized at that moment that if I stayed there, if I perpetuated that relationship, which kind of becomes addictive at a certain point, because a lot of us that get in these relationships are very sensitive. We're empaths. We want to help them. We see how much they're hurting. We want them to change. At the same time, we're being gaslighted or being told that it's our fault, right? And so we get caught up in this really painful, really difficult dynamic to escape. And for me, it hit home that day when I was like, wow, like, I'm right here perpetuating war. And if I don't leave, like, I'm going to lose my life. Because rather than having the energy and the power, and I knew even back then that I had a lot to offer to the world, and I was a healer, and I'm like, I will never be a healer. I will never be who I'm meant to be, because my energy is just going to go to this one man who's going to suck it up for the rest of my life. And now imagine if I have kids with him, and then I have to co-parent with him, and I have women who are in this scenario, right? Or if it's their second or third marriage to the same kind of man, because they haven't yet gotten the support to break the cycle. So that was my realization. And that's when I made a commitment, like, I will not stay here. I will not stay here, because I will never be the force for peace and love in the world that I want to be if my energy is going to be going here. And that's why I'm so passionate about what I do, because so many of the women that are now, we're becoming healers. We finally have freedom to be who we are and to actually, like, influence the world in really tremendous positive ways, and these with our hearts and with our feminine power. And it's like so many of us are spending that on in narcissistic relationships because we have such big hearts, because we love so much, because we want to help so much. And so my message is, if you're that woman, you're powerful, and like, look away, sister, like, walk the other direction, because you have a job, you have a purpose. I know you know it. If you're listening to this, you probably are that woman. And it's not going to happen as long as you're with this man. It's not going to happen.
Right. So now, Amelia, for you, how long did it take you to finally get out of that relationship?
It took a while. It was hard. Like, I'll admit I moved out. But then, like, a week or two later, I suddenly, like, find myself in his bed. And I, like, be like, what happened? Like I wouldn't remember. Like I wouldn't remember how I ended up there, but suddenly I was there. I'd be like, wait, how did I end up here again? Right. So there's that sort of bond that we have. We sometimes call it a trauma bond because it's so difficult to break. And we work with those kinds of situations because we actually get a certain kind of addiction to the drama, and there's things that happen there biochemically that we need to address and understand. But it took me about 3 years to like extricate myself. I literally had to move countries. I had to move because I honestly believe if I hadn't left Canada, this was in Canada, and come here to the United States, to California, I don't know that I would have been able to separate from him like I did. And if I were to be completely honest, I pined with for him for a full 7 years after.
So Amelia, how did you heal from that? Once you did get away and you moved to the United States, how did you go through the healing process? Because I'm sure that wasn't easy.
Yeah, well, exactly. It wasn't easy, and I didn't know where to start. I just knew that something was wrong. And I had started some therapy in Canada in my 20s, and it had been really helpful. And for me, what I found really difficult was that I wasn't able to get any support or validation from my family. Like, I remember telling my dad, like, this happened, and I was with this man, and New Year's Eve, he was having a depressive episode, and I had made like this New Year's Eve dinner, and I was like, oh, come, let's eat, let's celebrate New Year's Eve. And he slammed me against the wall, this man. And I told my dad about it, and my dad was like, I know, but he loves you.
Oh my God.
But that was the message, right? Like, love comes with abuse.
Right.
Like that was the message. It's like, if you really love someone, you'll stay for no matter what. And I knew that there was something weird about that, but I didn't quite know what, because it was so normal. Mm-hmm. Like it was just so normal. So when I came to the United States is when I started therapy and really started looking at like, what is with my family? Like what kind of a family system did I grow up in? So therapy was really, really helpful for that. It was helpful for the validation, for understanding the rules. The therapist that I saw did not know anything about narcissism or narcissistic abuse at that time. I also found myself with therapy coming to a place of like, it just no longer worked. Like I knew what was wrong, but I didn't know how to fix it, which is why I decided to become a coach, because I realized that coaching, particularly doing Alison Armstrong's courses, Harv Eker's courses, a whole bunch of personal development courses, that was what gave me the tools to create what I call a sacred partnership with my husband, where it's like 1 + 1 is more than 2. Like it's not like 1 + 1 is 2. It's like 1 + 1 is like 500. Like he gets to be more than he would be. I get to be more than I would be. We have our lives synergized, right? And so with that came my commitment, like to just getting through it and healing. And so I'd say it took about 12 years between therapy and coaching, but coaching really gave me the tools, especially with Alison Armstrong, to build this amazing partnership with men. And so I started dating that way. I started dating smart. I stopped attracting narcissists. I started healing my own stuff. At the same time, I started gleaning the skills to partner with men, with masculine men, because they're different. And that's how I got here.
So, Amelia, that's interesting that, you know, you went through this entire process. But my question for you is, as you were going through the healing process, because it sounds like you were really traumatized from this relationship, and also discovering your family's blueprint and things that happen in your family, I'm sure that wasn't easy to uncover, right? So in that process, though, and now I ask this because you're a coach, is do you find that it's important for women to first heal before they start over and get back out there and date, or can they do it simultaneously based on the degree that they were affected from the narcissistic person?
Yeah, and you know, that's a really good question, and I do get asked that a lot, and I, of course, it's preferable to get healed before we get into any new relationship for a multitude of reasons. We're going to be a better partner. We're going to pick a better partner. we're going to date more quality, so we'll likely marry quality. And the biggest one of all is we probably are going to avoid another really costly, emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually, really, really costly divorce, right? Like train wreck divorce, right? This is what happens. And that's what I see, the trajectory. It's like if that blueprint doesn't get handled in the first marriage, it doesn't get handled in the second marriage, doesn't get handled, you know, it at somewhere along the line, it breaks. And women realize like, oh shit, my picker's broken, like really, 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 really broken. And so is it better? Is it better to fix it or can you fix it as you're going? I think everybody is different. But what I say to women, to single women, especially is mostly who I work with, is the dating journey is such a powerful self-awareness, personal growth, spiritual empowerment journey. Because that journey actually can become our tool for the growth and the healing. Because as we date, as we get better at showing up authentically and asking for what we need and being vulnerable and partnering with men, the quality of men and the quality of our connections changes. And that's actually a beautiful way to heal and to gauge when we're actually ready to partner in a healthy way with a healthy man. But I mean, if I could have it all my way, like every woman would heal and then go create a sacred partnership, because that kind of partnership is sustainable and fulfilling, you know, even if it ends, you know, it's still a partnership. Like you, then you're going to like conscious divorce and things like that. So it's very different from a narcissistic relationship. So the sooner you can get out of that blueprint, the better.
Right, right. And for everybody, I think it's a different timeline, how long it will take them to heal. And I think everybody should be kind to themselves as they're going through the process and not feel like, oh, well, she healed so much faster, I think I should be like her. No, everybody's individual in, number one, their experience, right? But also in their healing. But I think it's important to also point out that it's important to also not get stuck once you do heal and then not move forward because you're so now riddled in fear that I'm going to attract another narcissist that you do nothing. And so I think it's important. And I could see, you know, why someone like that might need a coach to help them take those steps forward so that they have the confidence they can break through their fears and keep moving forward instead of staying in that same place in between healed and starting over, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's some very common stages that everyone goes through. At this point, you know, it's pretty clear with the people I work with that those are the stages you need to go through to heal, basically. So one of the biggest things is we have to have community and we have to see people who understand this. It's misunderstood in the world at large. We don't exactly quite know what we're dealing with yet. Much like 20 years ago, we didn't really understand that much about alcoholism or codependency, right? And now we have a lot of research. We have a lot of work out there on this. So that's actually one of the reasons why I'm putting my research and my work also into a book. So that's going to be exciting when that comes out. But yeah, there's definitely the path, and then there's definitely some common stages. So I'd like to just outline, if I may, three of them and also some major mistakes I see people making.
Sure.
Yeah, because like you said, getting stuck. That is so big. Because mm-hmm. people don't know what to do because there's not really validation. There's that gaslighting phenomenon that we mentioned, the cognitive dissonance of the realities, right? So finding community, finding support, finding books and Facebook groups and coaching, therapy, other people who've gone through it. It's so important. And I believe that it's really sacred because we have that, Suzanne. Like, we have that today in 2019. Mm-hmm. Those of us who have that blueprint from our families of origin, from our generational ideas that we were raised with, like those people didn't have the tools we have. Right. Like they didn't have internet, they didn't have books, they didn't have therapy, they didn't have psychology, they didn't have what we have. So I feel like, yeah, we can break the cycle. We can do what they couldn't do. I believe we're the answered prayers of our ancestors, because if they could have, they would have. and they couldn't. And so we can do what they couldn't do, and we have the support. So rather than getting stuck, it's just the number one pillar is like, know that this is a problem that has a solution. Mm-hmm. And that if you're getting stuck, that's easy. It's easy and it's normal, meaning it's easy to get out of being stuck, but it's normal to be stuck because it's so overwhelming. And so look for community, look for support, look for books, look for validation, go to therapy. So my first pillar for moving through is get unstuck, but know that being stuck is normal. And how do you get unstuck? You get into community, you get into action on healing and healing, keep the momentum going, keep the research going, keep the understanding going, listening to these kinds of programs or Googling, learning online about these things. And the second tip is, and you honed in on it, Suzanne, really well when you talked about the trauma. It was so traumatic. And I think what people don't realize is that they are dealing with emotional trauma. You know, people a lot of times come and tell me, well, my therapist doesn't understand narcissism, so they're not useful. And it's like, okay, well, maybe not, but do they understand emotional trauma? Because if you have a therapist that understands emotional trauma, that goes a long way, even if they don't understand narcissism, because what you're actually dealing with is emotional trauma. So pillar number one is stay in action to get unstuck. Getting community. Pillar number two is understand that you're dealing with emotional trauma. And pillar number three is the problem that has a solution. This is a problem that has a solution. We have the solution. It's out there. Go get it. And then can I just share some mistakes people make that keep them stuck?
Sure. If you could just share a couple, that'd be great.
Yeah. Number one, people wait for an apology. I see this all the time. They want validation from the person that hurt them. They want an apology. They want that person to admit that they did something wrong or validate their reality. It kept me stuck for 8 years. It keeps everybody stuck. So don't wait. It's not going to happen. If you're dealing with someone who has narcissistic traits, they're not there. It's not going to happen. So you got to turn the other way. Turn the other way. And that's my other tip is, as long as you're focused on the narcissist or the person who's mistreated you or abused you, you're not going to heal. Your healing lies in the other direction. You need to take your focus off that person and focus it on your future and moving forward and what you need. So those are some of the top two mistakes I see: waiting for an apology and never taking your focus off the narcissist.
I love that. And so, you know, something popped into my head as you were talking about finding community. And I agree with you. That is super important. But in dealing with a narcissist, right, having been in a relationship with one, is I think, how can women be sure, though, because I could see this happening too, like, let's just say in a private Facebook group that it supports a community of women that have been in a narcissistic relationship, is how it doesn't turn into we're all complaining about our ex-narcissist, right, and not moving forward, because if you stay in that cycle, that'll keep you stuck. So how do you use that to your advantage to heal, but not stay in the cycle of everyone's stuck in the same place? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense, because that can happen.
Yeah.
I have a Facebook group of over 4,000 people. I can mention the address if people want to join. And that can happen in the group. So I'm very careful to moderate not for that, and also have my train my moderators not to allow like it to be like a bashing thing. And at the same time, validation is a necessary stage of recovery.
Right.
So the goal is, how do we get validation without dehumanization, without it becoming like this huge narcissist bashing party, right? And so that's a very common thing that can happen, and we're very conscious of it, because there's a fine balance. We definitely want to allow space for people to share and get validation, but not to a point where it's just destructive.
Right. Now, that's a really good point. I love that you find that balance so that people can heal and start over. So this has been amazing, Amelia. So can you share with the ladies how they can find you?
Yes, I would love to. You can find me on womanworthyoflove.com. womanworthyoflove.com, and it is one woman, like single woman, womanworthyoflove.com. And also the Facebook group I mentioned is Facebook.com/group/NARC, NARC Thrivers.
Okay, great. So ladies, if you'd like to get more information on Amelia, you can go to either of those places. So thanks everybody for joining us on the It's Never Too Late show. Our show is available both in video and audio format, which can be found at yournextamazingstory.com.
Love today's episode of the It's Never Too Late show? Then head on over to yournextamazingstory.com to continue the conversation, get access to show notes, and get more amazing content.